Hill, Forest Hill, Maryland. Mr. O'Neill, when and where were you born?
Born on April 30th, 1920, Woman's Hospital in Baltimore.
I see. And do you have any brothers and sisters?
Seven brothers and sisters.
Do they still live in Harford County?
Let's see. Two brothers live in Harford County. One live in Shelbyville, Delaware. And one is died. And one sister lives in Harford County. One sister lives in Falls Church, Virginia. And one sister lives in New Hampshire.
When did you marry?
December the 10th, 1985, in San Pedro, California.
And what is your wife's name?
Lois May Schneppe. S-C-H-N-E-P-F-E.
Who were your parents?
Howard S. O'Neill and Mary Madeline Robinson.
Do you recall when they were born, Vance? When they were born?
Where did I recall?
Do you remember when they were born, your parents?
Just too little. not a day old.
Did they tell you about it later when you were...
Yes, I know. You know, just a youngster, I knew, lived in Bel Air.
Mm-hmm. What was your father's occupation?
He was a banker, automobile dealership, electrical hardware store, 5 and 10 cent store, First Electric Company in Harford County. Farmers owned farms. He didn't actually farm. Harford County Boat Club and many other varied businesses. His main vocation was banker of Farmers and Merchant National Bank, law and insurance.
I see.
He got his law degree when he was 54, 5 years old.
Where did he?
University of Baltimore.
I see.
No education.
No education?
He didn't even have a grammar school diploma. Self-read, very, very brilliant man.
Mm. Do you have any grandchildren?
11, 12 coming on.
Still in Harford County?
Children?
Yeah.
Now, four of them is in with my oldest son in Kensington, near Washington, D.C. He's a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. O'Neill, I know that your family's lived in Harford County for over 200 years.
On my father's side. More than that on my mother's.
And, I was kind of hoping that you could share some of that history with us, since both sides of your family have been here for so long.
I know a lot about Harford County. One thing is, it certainly has grown over the last couple decades. It used to be that we knew everyone on Saturday nights when we gathered in either Bel Air, Aberdeen, or Abergrass. Everybody was knowledgeable of everybody else. There was a lot of activity going on. In Bel Air, there must have been one, two, three, four, about five hotels, which I don't think we have one in there now.
No.
Kenmore Inn, Country Club Inn, Vaughn's Hotel, U Tree Inn and Circle Inn, all hotels in this particularly back in the Prohibition days, was quite active here. Also, probably one of the biggest things that started around here was the my father gave the land for what now is the Hartford Mall. And he, they started the farm fair, Hartford County Farm Fair. And then after, probably after the war, or at least it disbanded during the war, they built a racetrack. They had a racetrack, but they built a Bel Air racetrack here.
Right.
Thoroughbred racetrack. He was treasurer of it under the Hartford County Fair Association. And then it was sold to Poland's, and Poland sold it to BTR, Mr. Hofberger's. That was the Baumer Track Raceway. And then, of course, BTR became the Hartford Mall. And that was about 98 acres there. And I think my father paid $3,000 for it. And then my mother thought it was too far out of town to raise her children. So she, they built a place on what's now William Street, Allison, where it's the man house, that have the alcoholic halfway house.
Right.
And it was 20 acres there. I used to farm it.
That was called Dungannon?
Dungannon.
That's right.
And that's where our folks came from, County Tyrone, Dungannon, County Tyrone. I was back there 3 or 4 years ago when I went to Dungannon, Tyrone. Of course, they didn't like us back there. O'Neill's fought for 600 years there.
Oh, God.
Where the Red Hand of Ulster and the first kings of Ireland were two brothers. And Niall of the Seven Hosts was, they had a contest. Whoever hit Ireland first, touch Ireland first, would be the king. So my ancestor was left-handed, and he cut his right hand off and threw it on the land before his brother landed. That's the right hand, bloody right hand of Ulster.
Hmm. So both sides of your family have been here for a long, long time.
On my mother's side, they were Irish. Canes. K-A-E-N. Oh, K-E-A-N, C-A-I-N, and that's the both of them is pronounced the same way in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
They were farmers, agriculture people mostly, in Forest Hill. My folks, father's folks, in the Havergrass Darlington area.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned to me before, some relatives that fought in the Civil War?
Yeah, my grandfather, John B. O'Neill, was the one I really know about, was the cavalry officer. He was spy for the South against the North in the World War, in the Civil War.
Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned that your family kept the Havre de Grace Lighthouse?
The Concord Lighthouse, which is sometimes called the O'Neill Lighthouse, which has a cannon there with my namesake on it, John H. O'Neill, who defended the British against, defended Havre de Grace against the British. Admiral Cockburn, I think that's what his name, captured him.
Mm-hmm.
And his daughter, Tilda, pleaded for his life. And she did such a good job, the Admiral let him loose.
Huh.
Because the reason why I captured him, it was because he was in civilian clothes. But she proved that he was an army officer, but they had no money for uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
And she took out the certificate and they let him go. And Admiral gave her a snuff box, which is now in the Hartford County Historical Society on Kenmore Avenue, or Hayes Avenue.
Well, you grew up in the Dungannon House, which is now the Mann House.
Right. It was 20 acres there. And we always had livestock. I burned my father with the Guernsey cows, which I had to hand milk every once in a while. I was 4 years old when I got my first Shetland pony. I used to ride all over Bel Air with it.
What was Bel Air like when you were?
Well, just to give you an example, we're in town now, of course, quite a bit in town. At one time, William Street and Dallas Sand were just dirt roads. There was no sewer, public sewer and water. We had our own septic tanks and wells. It was really just two main streets. Main Street and, well, it's Bond Street now. We used to call it Back Street. Uh-huh. And, of course, Conowing, Port Deposit Avenue, whatever it is on the other side. Town was it, but the rest of them just farms all right around town. Shamrock was a farm. Howard Park was a farm. I farmed there for 20 some years. That's where I started driving horses and farming. Used to be an orchard, Dr. Kelly, which is now there in Denver.
Right.
Dr. Kelly was the owner of that place. That was a big place. And really, it's just there's nothing but agriculture around here.
So it was a really small town?
Oh, very small. People used to drive horses in and park it on our... We had a hay field across from Dungan House, and they used to tie the horses up there and walk into the Bel Air shop.
Huh. Could you tell us a little bit about what farming was like when you were young?
Farming?
Yeah.
When I started, I was just young. Boy, just about 12, 14 years old. I worked for the Dennis family who rented the Kelly farm, which is near Denver farm. And we were in the orchard business. And the main operation was horses, mules. And I drove horses and mules, planting and cultivating tomatoes. And of course we had apples and peaches. And we raised tomatoes, beans, cabbage, strawberries, and whatnot. And I worked 10 hours a day for a dollar. Drove horses in the day, morning and mules in the night. And then finally we got I used to have horses too. And I plowed gardens in Bel Air with a pair of horses. Used to plow gardens. I dug a couple cellars with horses. And the first tractor I bought was a Fortson from Fritz Kelly. It was a steel wheel tractor. And then Dennis started buying tractors. Steel wheel tractors, and then we got into the rubber tire tractors, mostly international tractors, mm-hmm. farm all tractors.
About what time period was this?
Well, I'd be back in the 30s, about 36 before I went to, I remember going to college in 37. We cut corn by hand, chopped it, mm-hmm. and I worked all day Sunday before I went up to finish up the 9-acre field. I got $25 to cut the 9-acre field by hand. Well, a dollar or two a day was a lot of money.
Sure.
Ice cream cone and nickel.
Yeah. Where did you go to school?
I went to St. Margaret's Elementary School. I went in there, I was about 5 years old. I went through about 6th grades, I think. I skipped a couple grades. And then I went to Bel Air High School. It's on Gordon Street now. I think that's an elementary school there. And I graduated there in 1936. I just turned 16. And then I went to Mount St. Mary's College in Emmitsburg. And I graduated there in 1940.
I see.
I majored in, I didn't know what to do. They finally gave me Bachelor of Arts in Science. I took all everything. Pre-law, pre-med, pre-engineer. I wanted to be a veterinary. That's pretty much a pre-med, but the war picked me up when I was 20-something years old.
You were summa cum laude there, weren't you?
Also at the Columbia University, the Naval School of Columbia University Naval Academy, 4 months there.
Was that was when the war broke out?
Yeah. Now, I have a bad knee, a horse fell on me, but they classified me 4F, but I got a senatorial appointment to this. And they said I'd be in on land in supply, but I graduated first, which I received a Duke sword from the Duke of Windsor at the New York Yacht Club.
Wow.
And it was, so I got the choice of my billet, and I took gunnery on destroyer.
You served in the Pacific in World War II.
Yeah, the Philippines to the Tokyo Bay. I was in Tokyo Bay right after they dropped the bomb.
Oh.
We were going in. Mm-hmm. Went through typhoons. Mm-hmm. That was the worst part of it.
When did you go into active military service?
Well, I guess it was in the 42 or so, right after Pearl Harbor. But I shipped over. We got out in, D-Day, VJ Day was in, I think it was November the 15th, 1945. Mm-hmm. And there's about 300 destroyers in Tokyo, in the bay, in Japan. So they put all, they needed one ship for Astoria, Oregon. So we put all the destroyer names in there, and our name was pulled, and we went, it took us 4 days to get to Astoria, Oregon.
Oh, wow.
So that, so after that, we had a very nice captain, and I worked with mothballing guns, and that's stripping them and putting a plastic cocoon over them to keep them from, and put soaker gel in it to keep them from rusting. After the war, they wanted, so I helped develop that. So I used to teach it too when we came back, and the captain got me to ship over 6 extra months to put 200 destroyers away in San Diego at the destroyer base.
Yeah, this was just after the war?
Yeah, after after we came back to Astoria, Oregon.
Okay.
We went on down, and then we stopped at Long Beach, San Pedro. And that's when the captain told me, he said, well, I can get out, I've got time. He said, well, I want you to stay over. Awful nice man. He said, I can make a captain rating. He was a full commander. Mm-hmm. If I can put these destroyers away, and you know the top guns, and my buddy was an engineer officer, and he said, if you two stay over, he was married, so brought his wife out, and I said, I'm going home to get married. He said, you come out there, and I put the wedding on. And he put the wedding on when we got married out there. He was he gave Lois away.
Oh, that's great.
My daughter's gang was all a part of it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so I stayed in there until about, middle of 46, and then I came back, and I had to go to Bethesda for some operation.
I see. You were a gunnery officer on the destroyer?
Gunnery officer on the ship.
What was your destroyer's name?
USS Franks, 554. We have our reunion this year, which is the 49th in Massachusetts.
I see.
I'm a tin can. What we call tin can sailors. I belong to the tin can sailors organization. Quite a proud organization.
Well, you saw a lot of active duty in the Pacific, so you must have seen some combat.
Oh yes, Okinawa, Iwo Jima. Oh yeah, Kamikaze, torpedo runs. And one of our main jobs was to pick up sick chickens. Now that's pilots coming back to the carriers. We're more or less specialists with carriers.
Uh-huh.
We acted a little bit like taxicabs, you know, going from one carrier to the other. And then when we pick the pilots up out of the water and return them to the carriers, and we use the breech buoy and put them over on line, and then we would get yee-donk and pogey bait.
Uh-huh.
Gee donkeys ice cream. Because they could make it. Pokey Bacon's candy. And they used to send us a bunch over when we put a pallet over. Well, I think 23 pallets we picked up. Out of the water. Underway. Never stopped. Well, we had a good swimmer. And we tie a line to him. And we dropped down about 5 knots. And then he'd grab the pallet and pull him alongside in the cargo net and put him up underway.
Yeah.
General Van Fleet's son we picked up twice. He was army pilot. I mean, a naval pilot.
Well, after the war, you said you went to back to Bethesda, Maryland?
Well, just for some operations I had, spine, paralysis. You get some hemorrhoids when you sit on the cold decks. I had malaria. They got me straightened out.
And after that, did you return back to Bel Air?
So I went, started in the farm a little bit. Then I started farming big. And I bought a farm in Bel Air. And I had, my 42 Holstein heifers that I raised over on Dungannon. We just didn't have enough land, and I found the 75 acres right out of Bel Air off of Hall Street. And it comes right on down to William Street, and I was going to ship milk, those 42 heifers. I raised them from calves. But a fellow offered me more money than I paid for the farm if I didn't, so I just sold it to him. I went out of milk business 4 times before it went in. I raised horses, and then I got into beef cattle. A lot of beef cattle. Well, I kind of went out on my own after, I guess about 25 years with Dennis. The tomato business wasn't so good, but this last year we made a bunch of money, and I could see the handwriting on the lawn. The tomato business was, at one time, Maryland supplied half of the tomatoes in the United States, and Harford County drew half of them. So one quarter, we had over 40 or 50, so I don't know how many canning houses in Harford County that canned tomatoes, and of course corn too, with the F.O. Mitchell. By the way, O and F.O. Mitchell, the middle O means O'Neill. He was O'Neill. So I decided to get out of the tomato business, although I grew a few every year. And I expanded into grain and then into beef cattle. All kinds of grain, wheat, barley, oats, alfalfa, hay, Timothy hay.
Did you still have Dungannon at this point?
Yeah, we had part of it, yes. Mm-hmm. But I didn't use it very much, just for young cattle.
Uh-huh.
And then they start, my father starts selling them off to the Aegis office in the CMP Telephone Company. That's between Hayes and Wayne Street. And then they sold the 4 acres to Rosa Bauer and La Rosa and Bauer, and then they built homes on that.
I see.
And it was after his death, we owned the about 8 or 10 acres where the house is, about 10 acres. And after his death, we sold the upper end, and then we practically gave the main house to the man house.
Uh-huh.
And then we sold the bottom 5.5 acres for a big figure.
I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the Ma and Pa.
That's the milk train. It used to run from Baltimore, I think all the way up to York. And it stopped at all the little places, Vale, Falston, Vale, Bel Air was the big place. And then on up to Forest Hill, on up to Rocks. And their main was to ship milk from the farmers. The farmers used to bring the milk in the morning, and they would put it on the train and then ship it down there. And then, of course, I remember when I got a contract for the post office to unload coal. I got a contract for that. They brought the high Saigon dollars in there, and they put them off the side and let the Corbin fuel companies put them off the side. There were Southern States is now.
Okay.
That used to be Corbin's Fuel and Ice Company. He made ice there, 100 pound kegs of ice. And then Mr. Corbin started the first locker, frozen locker plant. And he had a butcher there who would cut up, I would take a side of beef in, two or three sides, and they cut them up and put them in the locker for you.
Huh.
They did butchering there. Same thing as Henry Gracio, of course he's quit now, Benson Meat. He did all that. The fact is, I owned that building one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I used to have produce, sell produce out there.
Oh.
One time. Oh, God, I've done a lot of things.
Well, you've been involved not only in the farming business for a long time, but a lot of other businesses.
55 years. Quit in 89.
But you ran quite a few other businesses at different times, too.
Yeah, I had the O'Neill landscaping business. I put the, like all the lawns, and I did lawn business. Started with horses, and then I got a Ford tractor. And I graded and seeded lawns for Howard Park, Wakefield Meadows, Fairmount, and then individual lawns. And I had moving business, O'Neill Moving Company. And I must have moved 3,700 pianos and organs. I got the big thing, safes and all like that. I move buildings and anything, move heavy stuff.
Mm.
You know, but that was some. And then I started a commercial steel company, Bel Air Industries. Commercial steel company in the sign blank business. I started the chicken house on my farm, Bel Air. And we started with tin plate, button steel tin plate that wasn't gauged enough properly for 10 cans. Oh, it was 20 gauge, 14 gauge, whatever we got. Didn't make any difference. Thousands of towers didn't make any difference for sign blanks.
Right.
So we made the sign blanks, 20 by 28, 10 by 14 sign blanks. And we punch holes in them. And then we spray paint them and put them in an infrared oven light, which had the double coat. You had to spray paint it four times. And so we developed, Mr. Bob Gentrick was my partner in that, an awful good man. And he's really one that started me in it. He wanted some place, wanted me to help him for 3 years. And I stayed 30 years with him. We bought the film station down there where Ron Adams Auto Gallery is. It's right down there before you get to, well, say Wendy's or Frank's Hardware. It's on Route 1.
Oh, okay, okay.
Right past Shoemakers and Sawline, all that on
right.
Route 1. And we built onto that. That was nothing but a little film station.
Huh.
And we built up to almost 30,000 square feet in that. We bought land and we did all the work ourselves. And we made an oven. 85-foot oven. We built it ourselves, a double roller coated and had gas heat. So it only take a couple minutes and then the thing was already done. Instead of taking 4 days, we in 10 minutes or so, we could have both sides. And we supplied the real estate people. And he did silk screening too. He did that. And then we got in the floor business, the elevated floor for the computer machine. That was Bel Air Industries. And we, honeycomb panels, 2 foot by 2 foot. And if you're familiar with the drop ceiling, we were opposite. We shoot pedestals into the concrete floors, any height they wanted it, because they were adjustable for tolerances for level, cross level.
Okay.
And we put a grid across, 2 foot grids, and then put the panels on top, and then you could pick them up, and they had all the air conditioning, the electrical, and the communications down below, because computers had to be, have, you know, pretty guardian type of operation. They they couldn't have too much humidity. He has to be right there.
They're real sensitive.
So we did it, and we shipped jobs to ITT, Avon, ATT, the silos out west for the missiles. We did all that. Then we sold that building. No, I took the building over, and we bought the Forestell Air Park. I bought it before, so Jenner, and I had three or four fellows been there, and we started a terrazzo plant up there, which is tile made with concrete and chips of stone and all, and then you grind it. You know what a terrazzo floor looks like, 1 foot by 1 foot, and that really went under. Freight, and I told them freight was going to be the downfall. It was just too heavy to do it. We were working on epoxy, quarter inch epoxy, put broken Coca-Cola glass or any kind of stone in that, and then it had a little resiliency. Uh-huh. And it would just be like your floor tile.
Right.
The floor tile. And so we sold that building, and I ended up, Mr. Jenrick and I ended up with the air park. Land. I bought it. We bought it originally with three or four other fellows. It was 70 acres. We bought it rather reasonable, $500 an acre. But back in those days, that was a pretty good price. And we put in the airstrip, 2600.
Oh, you helped put the airstrip in.
All right. And we put in 10 hangars. And we built the commercial steel building.
About what time period?
That would be in the 60s, probably in the 60s.
Okay.
I started out to him with 50, in 1950, I'm sure that's the date. And I stayed with him to about 80. Mm-hmm. And I just told him to go ahead and run it. So then I bought the thing back and sold it and bought it back. And finally, Bob Martin and Larry Wilson and myself, I mean, they came in, we bought Mr. Jentrick out, and then he'd done some very good work putting all those other buildings. I mean, we put up a couple buildings.
It's a big complex now.
Oh my, yes. It's nice. Well, I was county commissioner, and I said, I thought we ought to have something more than Bedroom County that we could get industry in it, so I put my money where my mouth was.
Well, that brings me to another question. Mm-hmm. How did you become involved in politics? When did you take your first step?
I ran three times. It was about time my daddy run 48 for Senate. I wasn't overly anxious to get involved in politics, but politics has been in the family a long time. My granddaddy, my mother's daddy, was Attorney General of Maryland, Thomas Robinson. And he was Attorney General of Maryland under Governor tell me who it was. Hmm. I'll think of a minute. And he died when he was slated for governor. Hmm. He was Attorney General. Ritchie, under Governor Ritchie.
Oh, okay.
That was back in the 20s. I guess I was just a young boy, remember him, I guess, be about 30, been just about up around about 30, 1929, 30, he died. And my father was, of course, was a senator, and my brother was in, he was mayor of Bel Air, Jim, James O'Neill. And my brother Harry was judge, and my uncle, Jack Robinson, John A. Robinson was judge. And his daughter married Albert Close, who was judge. And on the Kane family, they're in the Register of Wills, clerk of the courts. And they're all been in politics. Hmm. So I decided to get in there. I've, of course, been a Republican. It was about 4-5-1. And they get beat every time. Three times. I finally got it in 62.
What?
The Democrats finally said he'd been running long enough to try that. So I made a couple terms there, then I made first president of council.
What was the first office you won in 62?
That was county commissioner. There was only three then. Then they had 5 county commissioners. Mm-hmm. Then there were 7 councilmen to the president. And I was first president there. I was with the... I finally got to be president of the Maryland Association of Counties. Used to call that the Maryland County Commissioners Association. Mm-hmm. And when I cut them in, I said, it looks like we've got a lot of charter counties and we want to get them a member, so we changed the name, because the national, NACO, is National Association of Counties. I said, we just call it MACO, Maryland Association.
Oh.
So that's when I did that. I was on the Baltimore Regional Planning Council.
Well, what type of things did you do as a councilman? What kind of changes did you see happening while you were on the council and council president?
You mean coming from? Well, I was really against the charter form as we have. I wanted to go to code home rule, like Comico County has it, and it's very successful. Home rule is not bicameral; it doesn't have an executive. It has the county commissioners, but it hires a manager. Mm-hmm. But they have the express powers under the state law to enact local laws. In other words, they could change dog laws, they could do anything that affect the county themselves. Otherwise, a county commissioner would have to go to the General Assembly to enact certain laws that affect the county itself, and it was really rubber stamped by the rest of the representatives, senators, and the delegates. If the local count representatives voted for it,
I see.
So that way you'd have more exposure to the public to be able to review certain things coming up before the council. Probably the most difficult thing that I saw. We just jumped from kindergarten to college. We could have gone through code home rule and then go into what they call the weak executive, and then into the fully bicameral executive. You know. Mm-hmm. Weak executive would be one of the councilmen that would be designated as the executive.
I see.
The most difficult thing, and I've worked most of the time in budgeting and fiscal and finance, was the adapting budgetary and fiscal financial operations in the councilmanic form of government as versus the county commissioner. It's very easy in the county commissioner. But I saw the growth of the county. I always thought when we hit 200 we probably would be into the full councilmanic form of government. But I got defeated as county executive. Probably on the basis that I thought that we were jumping too fast.
I see.
Very costly. Very costly. And then it's politically, there's disagreements between the council and the executive all the time. And I never was one person to do that. I knew how to. I always tried to compromise without any, a lot of hullabaloo about what you're doing.
Yeah.
But a lot of the political people that are elected try to, I don't know what they're trying to do, they're trying to just stir up a little stuff when it really doesn't do any good for the county itself.
Yeah.
Not only within the county, but within statewide.
Sure.
We've got President Cowan fighting with the executive. It's here and I'm going to support it. That's all we can do.
Sure. Before the commissioner form of government, wasn't there another form?
I don't know anything else besides county commissioners. Always 3 of them. 3 county commissioners for all my life.
Okay.
Whatever it was before that, I don't know. I don't think. I think it's just always been county commissioners.
Okay, I see.
You ever heard the name of Bill Whiteford? William Whiteford?
Oh, sure.
William O. Whiteford? Mm-hmm. He probably knows more about this county government than most people. He was the administrative assistant when I was in there.
I see.
And he used to be with the That was Assessments, I think, at one time. Yeah, I think it was Assessments. Very knowledgeable fella. Very astute. He knew his fiscal position of the county, and he was very good with it. He taught me a lot.
Well, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how you got into auctioneering.
Auctioneering?
Yeah.
Well, I was, as a little boy, I kind of lisped a little bit. I was tongue-tied a little bit. And a member aboard ship, I was talking very good. Our doctor aboard ship was a pretty good surgeon. And I was telling him that because I had to call commands over the gun. He says, I can have, and he cut the frenulum of the tongue. I was tongue-tied and lisped a little bit. Mm-hmm. And when I got out, I was pretty well broken up. And so I couldn't speak as well as I should. Huh. Something like Mel Tillis. He can sing well, but he can't talk too well. I'll lisp a little bit if you ever said that. Mm-hmm. So I was under rehabilitation. They said, let's send him to auctioneer school.
Oh, I see.
But I had been working with auctioneers as clerks. And I clerked and cashiered for auctioneer, particularly Mr. J.O. Ryan. And he was my mentor. And I worked for the Aberdeen Sales Company and Mason-Dixon. I was really with the Aberdeen Sale Company, Mr. Farrell. Kent Farrell, I worked with him for many years, running the office and clerking and everything else. So I like the auction business. I went out there and come back talking. And I've been very lucrative. I've been in the business 47 years, 48 years now, I guess. And I had three regular sales a week. Then I had antique sales, mostly farm sales, as the farmers were getting out of business here. Selling the land for development. I'd sell the cattle, machinery, a lot of good antique sales, state sales. Probably the biggest one is the Kirk sale. I brought about $500,000. Had 12 sales up there. That was when I had that big hearse.
Right.
On hearse. And that was some sale. There were furniture in there that was over 100 years for people that wanted the Kurtz family to fix it up. I found one Hitchcock chair that had my great-great-great-great-granddaddy's name on.
Oh, wow.
It'd been there 100 years. It's brought $800. And the people would bring them up there for him to fix it, and he'd just store it and never got around to it. It had 800 chairs there.
Jeez.
I don't know how many cases of grandfather's clocks and all.
That's unbelievable.
That was quite some sale now. Had people calling from Florida, Boca Raton, Florida, bidding on things.
Good grief.
And I mean, at fabulous prices. Because the oldest of the hills, that one low boy you saw in there brought $14,500.
Right.
And George Bush's son did $14,000, but he didn't get it. Sales tax on $725.
Jeez. Well, as an auctioneer, are you contracted to do an auction?
Mm-hmm. Well, you try to build up a reputation, and one thing leads to the other. And I do appraisal work. I'm an appraiser, and I'm an accountant. Mm-hmm. We do 400 or 500 income tax a year.
Still?
Right.
Jeez.
And, you know, one thing leads to another. You do the income tax, and somebody dies, you know, they say, how about appraising it? Okay. Say, how about selling it? So just one thing leads to another.
Sure.
And then I move people and somebody sell the house and say they're going to go someplace else and say, how about selling the furniture? So that's what you do. This thing. And of course I advertise agents.
Right.
But my son, Pat, is now auctioneer, and my daughter Amy also is.
So just like politics, I guess it just keeps running in the family.
Yeah, well, another thing, auctioneer gives you a lot of exposure, and it sometimes pretty good to run and be a politician and also, because you get to be known, you know. People know me. They said, I saw you at a sale here. You've been up to church, you know, lecturing or something. I don't know half the people, but they know me.
Okay, you mentioned your work for St. Ignatius Catholic Church here in Hickory. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that.
You said work for him.
I meant work as in you've been active.
I've been yes, I have worked for him. So I was about 5 years old, I guess I said my first mass there. I served my first mass. I used to serve, of course they only open on Sunday. My great aunt Kane, Fanny Kane, which is on my mother's side, she kind of helped to raise me. There were so many children. And they were old maids, she and her sister, Aunt Laura and Aunt Fanny Kane. They used to own a big farm up here, right near, including some of the right-of-way in that air park. And the Canes owned all the farms up there. I don't know how many hundreds of acres I own. But she sold the farm after Father gave it to her, and they came down to Bel Air on Broadway, alongside of my grandmother with her sister. And I used to stay with her, particularly during Lenten season, and I served Mass at St. Margaret's every day, 7 o'clock Mass. We used to walk over to St. Margaret's. And I served Mass there and come home and go to school over at St. Margaret's. And then on Saturdays afternoon, my Aunt Laura, who learned, got a driver's license in 65, couldn't even afford to get cars, I remember. We'd go drive to St. Ignatius and we'd clean the church. And then those ladies took care of the vestments, cleaning the vestments and everything, flowers and everything. And then she sang in the choir. I used to, a little boy, go up in the choir at St. Ignatius, and I pumped the organ. Sometimes I go to sleep and had to wake me up. But I had an old hand pump on that organ, beautiful organ up there.
Right.
But now it's electrified. Mm-hmm. And all my great uncles on my mother's side were all trustees. They had trustees up there. At one time, the church deed did not belong to the archdiocese.
Really?
It belonged to the St. Ignatius as a church.
Huh.
It was started by the Jesuits from Priestport. They came up here, and Ignatius Wheeler gave the ground for the St. Ignatius Church. And that's the reason why they call it St. Ignatius, after Ignatius Wheeler. And so, I mean, we did a lot of work. And then we would have the affairs, the big dinner on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. And my Aunt Laura and Aunt Fanny were helping for them. And we'd go up there at 5 o'clock in the morning, kill chickens, fryers, pick them and clean them. And old Maggie Rumsey, good black lady, had a place there with two great big old stoves, wood stoves, and she would fry all the chicken. And you're talking about Southern fried chicken now. She would fry all the chicken there. And politicians, the governor would come up there and everybody.
Jeez.
And we had the baked tables and they baked cakes. And then, of course, we had lima beans and cook corn and cut it off and have succotash. Oh, boys, they have all kinds of good food up there. Mm. And then they had always had a little wheel, which is a racehorse wheel, made out of an old buggy wheel. And they put it on a post, a little spindle, and they put the figures of these horses, man of war, and all the different horses on it. And then they have a clothespin, put nails all around it.
Right.
And they have a clothespin with a little a piece of metal stuff on it. And they turn that about a nickel and get a quarter or something. It was very interesting, everything. And then on Sundays, they used to have maybe 100 people come there, St. Ignatius. Right across the way was a filling station and the tavern. And a lot of time, the men would drop the ladies off and go over to the tavern there. And that name, and I should all remember that, the name of it, I'll remember it for. And yeah, I remember when they used to tie horses up there, they had rails tie horses to come to the church.
Wow.
Strickland, Mr. Strickland, that was the name of the place. He's the one that had four or five different types of gas, Bethylene, and American, all that. And they had those big old pumps, you pumped them up, put 5 gallons on top, and then pull the lever.
Oh, gosh.
I think, remember, gas was about 6 gallons for a dollar. And then in the church, they had sacrificial wine. Which they used for the wine up there. And it was made in these bottles. That's a rendition of it. And what they did, all the empty bottles, they took them out in front of the church, turned them upside down in the ground. And they used to walk on them. It was a little muddy, see?
Yeah.
So I made a walkway with it.
Oh, that's nice.
And when we improved that up there, we found, oh, I don't know how many of them. And there's one on the, I've got these stone bottles. And this is, this was found in 1975. The bottles were buried upside down, arranged in a line about 6 inches below the surface of the ground. That's when the valve was up on top. It said unable to date the bottles, probably between 1860 and 1890.
Wow.
And they may have gone back as far as 1830. Hmm. That's what they had up there. Then we were, the Catholic Church, there's probably only one left now that has it, had tournaments. Horseback riding,
oh,
with the lance.
Oh, gosh.
And St. Margaret's had it. I rode in that. St. Ignatius had it. St. Mark's had it. And St. Mary's still has it, the tournament riding. This is the lance. And it's balanced, but it's heavy. Put your fingers there and ride the horse and catch rings.
Jeez.
You get down to a quarter inch ring. Three rings. And that's this is the Maryland Sport Tournament. I really think the General Assembly wants to change it to something else, and I've forgotten what it is, bowling or something. But the tournament is the old English. Well, it actually comes from where the knights used to unseat themselves.
Used to joust.
That was quite a thing for the church. The big supper, the early supper, was quite. Now they have bull roasts and festivals, and Christmas festival and for fundraising. But it's been a grand old church. It's closed for 3 years. And it was Mary Street and Louise Wilson, whose daddy was the Mahans, and her, the Mahan brothers, daddy and uncle, were the trustees. And my great uncle Matt Kane, my good hunting buddy, Andrew Cummins, his daddy, they were all the, and Mr. Poole, Joe Poole's daddy, were trustees up there. They ran the church and trustee and were ushers. The church at that time had pew rent. And they still have the old metal holders where they put the nameplate in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was $6 a year, 50 cents a month. And you ran the pew. And then Sundays, the ushers would bring them, the ladies and all, to their proper pew. And nobody sat in anybody else's pew. And then about, I've forgotten how many years ago, when Father Rose was down at St. Margaret's and he was taking care of, see, one time, St. Ignatius from St. Ignatius, all the other churches in Harford County came to fruition. St. Mary's and St. Patrick's and St. Mark's and St. John's and St. Stephen's and St. Margaret's and all that. Because this is St. Ignatius, the original church. In fact, it's the oldest Catholic church in Baltimore diocese. And it was about that somebody wrote a letter, a postcard, saying that the church, right after St. Rosa Lama, roof fell in. And we had a rod through the church. We thought the wall was maybe getting a little bit weak. Mm-hmm. And they closed the church.
What abouts was this?
Oh, God. It has to be 15, 18 years ago. You never got the book of Mr. Clarence Jarrett wrote on the church, did you?
No.
I don't know where I had that. Had it somewhere that tells about the whole thing. He's got the full history of it. The church has a book up there. They got them for sale. And so we got together, Louise Wilson, Miss Mary Street, and I formed a little committee to try to reopen it for 3 years. I went down to the building committee for the archdiocese for every month, and we collected $30,000 for what little people we had there. So we got this Van Rensselaer Sackman, which is a retired engineer, bridge engineer, and Mr. Arthur Gump, who just died, he was the engineer. And he was with the archdiocese as more or less inspector to help the archdiocese in some of their improvements. And this engineer from Van Rensselaer's SAC said he could do it. They thought the walls were bad, but that old church had been built on three or four times, I think. It was originally just the first part, then they put the they lengthened the church and put the sacristy in and put the side room in and then put tower, all that's been added on to the original church. I think the original church is about 80 foot, and I think it's one piece of timber up on top of all that, about 80 foot and about 12 inch by 14, 16.
So it was a small
and
church.
And it had trusses made out of 8x8s, 6s, and some of them that were cracked. So this fellow engineer said, "I know what we can do. We're going to put a bridge truss all the way from the front bearing wall to the back bearing wall." And it brought it up like a rector set, pieces. He designed the whole thing, and it brought it up in pieces, and it was bolted together.
I see.
Donald Harkins and John L. O'Neill built it. And it was only about 4 foot. And then steel gusset the top of the trusses. And we had posts in there with a plumb bob. And when we took the post out there, that plumb bob never moved. So we got it opened up. I can't remember the year, but I know it was midnight mass. And that was sometime. It had opened for November since.
Wow.
And it has grown, my goodness. And we got 2,200, 2,300, sometimes get 4,000 around Christmas come in there for masses.
Right.
So we're very... they're renovating the church now, all the floor, and they're going to put the pews back to the original style, that is, take all the paint off.
Wow.
And that is beautiful wood under there. At one time, there was two aisles, not on the ends, but the half pews were against the wall, big pew in the middle, and then they had aisles down on each side between the half pen and the middle.
Oh, I see.
pews in the middle pew. And then they decided to make three aisles. Mm-hmm. There's a main aisle and two side aisles. Then we, of course, we built the Father Griesacker come in. Monsignor Slade was there, came in when they had the renovation completed, and we reopened the church. And then Monsignor McCormick, and then Father Griesacker. Then he died, and we got Father Lafferty. And then he left us. And he's over St. Patrick now, I think, over Havergrace. And Father Ken Farbaugh, who was the John Carroll, he was a coach, basketball coach, awful nice man. And then we just completed, well, the Parish Center we built, and then we just completed the expansion of the Parish Center. Mm-hmm. And we have a very lucrative church. We don't know anything.
Also, about maybe 10 or 15 years ago, the interior of the church was repainted.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah, they used to have a, I don't know what you call that, but it was a pattern that used to go around.
Very ornate.
Yeah, detail. A very ornate pattern that went around that. I don't know what they call it. It's like a decaling thing, but it was actually painted on. They must use a template, mm-hmm. and paint it over the template, just like you do silk screening. And then they painted the whole top of it. The father, they wanted to remove the organ, and we thought no way we were going to, and put in an electronic organ. And that organ is worth all kinds of money. And we went back to Pennsylvania, I don't know, New York, I think it was. And they came down and said, don't move that organ, that organ is perfect. And we just about 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, we sent it out to Ohio and had it all refurbished. It's a beautiful organ.
It's a beautiful church. Beautiful church.
Yeah. And it's a nice little, very humble church. Nice little church. But we're closing down till September to do all the floors are bad. They've been sanded and they're thin and they're really very unsafe. So we're going to do all that. They've got some very valuable things there. They got some chalices, one from, I think, King Louis XIV of France. The Jesuits brought over, there's a jewel one. My grandmother Robinson's gave them one, it's a jewel one. And a lot of the vestments some of our people gave, they're very gold-braided vestments. And all, you know. The Stations of the Cross are very unique, very old, very good. And the picture of St. Francis over the altar, the portrait, the painting, I've tried to appraise everything and come to for insurance purposes, and it came to quite a many $100,000. And but I was not astute enough to be able to appraise that painting, and I think it's a French painting, I'm not sure. But we got somebody that knows painting and it's going to give us a. But we got a very friendly church.
I'd like to go back a little bit and ask you how the Depression affected not only you, yourself, and your family, and also Bel Air.
Well, you know, things were going pretty good, and the Depression came along. We had, at that time, we had 4 banks in Bel Air. We had the Commercial Saving Bank, which is in my grandfather's office. That's where the First Virginia Bank is now, right on Main Street. The Second National Bank is where the First National Bank is.
Okay.
And my granddaddy was president of that, the Tom Robinson, my mother's father. Mm-hmm. Where Johnson's Credit Company, I don't know if they still call it that, right on down from the First National Bank, right before we get to Stark and Keenan's law office. Mm-hmm. The white front building, I forgot, Johnson Credit Company sold it out. That was the Farmers and Merchants National Bank. And that, my father was the cashier and the CEO, the president run the bank, cashier run the bank. Mm-hmm. And I worked there as a boy, 8 years old, and all. I got 50 cents a week. And I used to do adding for them, account money. They used to bring pennies, $50 worth of pennies in a bag. And I had to get 100 piles of 50 cents in it. The last ones didn't have 50 cents in it, I had to go over and find out where in the state. Then they had the Hartford Bank. Mr. Evans, John, Mr. Evans was the CEO there. When the Depression came up, Hartford Bank went under. My daddy and granddaddy decided to merge the two banks, the Farmers and Merchants and the Second National. And that was made the First National Bank of Hartford. And that was probably in the 30s. But I remember I worked there in the summertime some, $5 a week. Mr. Wally Hopkins was the cashier there. And I did, well, I was a runner. I did what they call the foreign letters. That's all the checks on other banks. We sent it out every day, Federal Reserve Bank, and then they would distribute them back to the bank. And I had to write up by hand the bank number, the amount, and everything else. And then I would, my job was to take back the non-sufficient checks to the A&P or to Getz's Pharmacy, to different places, Walker's store or something like it. They didn't like seeing me come in because they knew I had to bounce the check. But my dad lost the bank. He had the motor sales garage where the First National Bank drive-in is. Yeah, he gave the business to his partner, Herb Hanner, and he kept the building. And then he lost the 5-10 cent store. Mr. William Terrell used to run that. That was on Main Street, alongside of Dave Cohen's little tall Main Street haberdashery store. And then he owned about half Main Street. And then he owned Cortland Street, it had the Hartford Hardware Company. No, not the Hartford Hardware. The electrical and the hardware store. The Hartford hardware store belonged to Fritz Kelly, Dr. Kelly, Larry Denner. I used to work there $5 a week. And 6 days on Saturday night. But he lost all that, and then lost an awful lot in the bank, maybe a million. So anyhow, he figured he might as well go broke as thousands of people. They paid off all the way. Mm-hmm. And he took over a lot of farms, and then he sold the farm. But he came back. He got in, after that he got in the law business and the insurance business. But he lost all those businesses.
Well, it must have been pretty tough on the other people in Bel Air too.
Oh yes. Well, everybody kind of, you take like the McComas brothers that had the big hardware and lumber company out there by Southern States. In fact, is where the washer place is, the automobile washer. Royal Farm Store is.
Right.
And where Napa is. Mm-hmm. And then across the road, where the Pioneer Cleaner, new Pioneer Cleaner, mm-hmm. and then the other building used to be the Napa. All back in those all McComas's.
Oh, okay.
And they had coal and all, but they were very good to people. They let people have it on account. They said, someday you'll pay us. And I think everybody paid them. Yes, sir.
Fine.
Huh?
Trying to get mine.
Good. Don't eat too much. So that, a lot of people, you know, they said they were jumping out of windows and all, but people understood what it did. I knew what it was. I went to college in 36, and the father didn't have any money. There's just no money to go. It was eight children. And I supplied, even back then, before I went to war, I supplied with meat and chickens and butter. I raised all that little boy. I had a little bit of money, and I bought things and raised chickens and eggs and sold eggs, butchered and everything else. So I went to college on a scholarship, and I cleaned classrooms for the first year, waited on tables, and then I was a bell ringer. I like bells.
Yeah.
And I rang the Angelus there for 4 years, 7 o'clock in the morning, 12 noon, 6 at night. Mm-hmm. So the second year, I talked the treasurer in to let me open up a college store, the Soto family. They didn't have it up there. And he finally decided to, so I made them $5,000 first year. And so they paid me a little bit plus let me go to school there. And I got all kinds of little, like they had beer jackets back there. You could buy them. People would put them in there on consignment to manufacturers. And beer mugs and little ornaments, and then I had the soda fountain. Uh-huh. So we made some money there. But it was a little rough, very rough. But people survived. People helped each other. Of course, everybody was pretty close. But it was an experience. Mm. We want to go to it again.
Well, your father was involved in banking. And later on, you became involved in banking.
Yeah, I was 1957, Forestville State Bank. Let's see, I was 37. Everybody said, what do you put a young boy on there for? And I had older people in there, but I went on board then. I was 37 years there. When it come to be 70, when we sold the Mercantile, Mercantile was that. Mm-hmm. But we're our Mercantile's branches or banks are still autonomous. Mercantile doesn't worry about their banking thing. The only thing they ask to do is that you put in a budget and you make a little money, and any of the two top people, they want to know who to put in. Mm-hmm. When Jim Magnus died, they put in Paul Peaks. So, but after you get there, I was 71 when I went off. I mean, they let me go. Well, I was just within 3 weeks of when I had the, I guess about 5 weeks when I had the election, board election. I had been 71. Mm-hmm. Hell, I just started to get smart. 2,000,006 when I went on that board. And when I went off, it was 210 now. Mm. We built all the branches. All we do is operate out of the Forestville. Mm-hmm. We built Jarrettsville. Built Whiteford. We bought Darlington, Merrill National, or Equal, I think, yeah. And we built in Bel Air North, and then we built the big one, Bel Air South, and then we went on down to Beta, to the one down by Beta Shoe Company.
Down around Aberdeen?
Hmm?
Around Aberdeen?
No. Well, before you get there, it's at Bell Camp.
Okay.
Bell Camp, where they got the big industrial park there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the banking business has been good to me. I've been good to them. Very interesting. I knew the people.
How long have you been here at Springwood Farm?
In 1959. That's 35 years.
So you bought this farm?
I bought it from Mr. Tom Willie, who was the vice president of Glen L. Martin. 1956, he went to Florida for the Martin Marietta, and he and his sister and brother-in-law, well, his sister and brother-in-law really stayed here most of the time, and he had Black Angus herd, purebred, and Mr. Harry Heaps helped me, and he said he won 85,000 lock, stock, and barrel hunting, about 130 acres. About 115, I guess. We've got 109, 6 acres in the middle of the, we had 6 acres in the middle of the woods, big woods over here, right in the middle of it. So this one time was a big grant, 2,500 acres one time. And then the kids of the fellow had kind of built these houses on these hills, mm-hmm. about five, six of these houses. And it divided up the land, and this didn't have much woods. So the father gave the daughter, whoever built here, said, we'll give you 6 acres of woods in the middle of the big woods. And that was very, and a lot of that was happened in where the grants were divided up. Mm-hmm. They didn't have timber, that they had what they call the big woods. And the parents, settled up the state, would designate a certain amount of acreage in the big woods so they could have their firewood and building timber. And so, 56, then I sent him a certified check, $15,000, said I wanted it. And so he wrote back, said, he had written me a letter, said he would sell it. He wrote back and said his wife didn't sign it, therefore it wasn't the thing, but he decided not to sell it. So I wrote him a very nice letter, told him it would be a nice place for me to raise children. I knew he was a very religious man. His son got killed over in, I think he was an English pilot. Mr. Willie was an Englishman. And I said, if ever come on the market, I'd appreciate it. That's why I would like to raise my children and be close to my church and all this and that. Probably only one letter I've really written. And 3 years later, he called me up. He said, John, you still want that farm? I said, yes, sir. He said, how much money? He said, don't want any more. Take the same price. And said, I just bought 10 purebred Angus heifers, paid $1,000 a piece for them. You can have them. He said, that was the nicest letter I ever got. Huh. And when he left all kind of money. He left dogs. He left everything. Furniture, deep freeze, nice furniture, rugs, everything in it. So I sold a herd. And all of farm machinery, because I had most farm machinery and a terrific amount of feed that I didn't need at that time. And I sold about $40,000 worth. So I sold my home down. Well, my great aunt had given me the home for taking care of her. And I brought her up here, and she stayed till she was 95. And it was only about a year. And brought up here. She loved farming. So it's, I built all the buildings, I built all the fences. And it was a nice farm though. Springwood, a lot of springs. I built the ponds, very nice. But it's good ground, Chester loam, and some mica soil, which has little mic in there, eyes and glass in there.
You've been really very involved with the community. You've been very involved with the community.
Aye. Boy Scouts, what he is. Oh, and everything. Red Cross. Well, you said the whole list there, my goodness. Knights of Columbus. Moose. Life Membership, VFW. Life Membership of the American Legion. Never got into Rotary Club. I wanted to get into. My daddy was quite a Rotarian, but Wednesday nights was a meeting, and I always had a sale Wednesday night for Aberdeen Sale Company because I couldn't go to meetings. But I did a lot of things. Stepping Stone, I helped start that. bonfire, help Dr. Cook. Dr. Cook's been an awful good man in that. I don't believe he'd been as successful without him. Knights of Columbus.
When did the farm fair begin?
See, this is about, I think, a sixth year, but it, way long ago, it was the Harford County Farm. And I think it was at the war they suspended that. I think that started in 1926. My daddy was treasurer of that. Mm-hmm. That was a big fair. They used to have trotting races, standard bred, driving races, carts. Mm-hmm. And then they had mule races. I used to ride mule races there. They went around the opposite way. You had to ride bareback with a broom, short broom. You didn't have a whip, you had a short broom. It's just an oddity, you know. Mm-hmm. Father one time had a car racing there.
Really?
Yeah, but this car jumped over and hurt somebody, they closed down. Mm-hmm. And then they started the fair, the racetrack there, and they moved the grandstand from the east side to the west side across the way. Mm-hmm. Because the sun was always in everybody's eyes on the east side, sun going down, so they put it on the west side.
And that the ground that the Harford Mall stands on now was a racetrack.
Oh yeah.
At one time.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That was a big affair. And the racetrack was a big affair. I hate to see the racetrack go. It was quite a boom to the economy around here.
Quite a few people came to the races, didn't
they? Oh my goodness, yeah. All of New York. My daddy used to give up in York County and all around there. He used to give some of the big ward healers, the politicians, a bunch of free tickets, you know, mm-hmm. to get in the track. All that dudes paid a tax and wasn't much, 5-10 cents. I sold, I got a job selling, my brother and I, programs there. Sell 1,000 programs, make a penny a piece, $10. I mean, that's big money.
Money.
And then I pick up a little money, give them tips. I had red hair, and used to rub my head and say, that's lucky, see. And then I get a pencil for a penny, and get a couple razors for a penny, and I cut the pencil in half and put a razor on it, and sharpen it and sell it for a nickel. See, I make 4 cents. So 100 pencils. It was quite something. Yeah. Yeah, people come from busloads down here. And then the Durham, where the Tollgate Mall is, Mr. Durham's grandson, who is Bill Taylor, who has the Wilkerson Insurance Company, he used to take off at 10 days, and I think they charged 25, 50 cents a park. He parked a whole bunch of cars. But it was enterprising, and all the restaurants did. We had a bunch of restaurants in Bel Air. We had the Wriggle restaurant run by Mr. Chackness, had the American restaurant run by the Demas, and Shannaris, let's see, he had the one on the corner of Main Street and Office Street, right the corner there. And I think it's a broker farmer now, Alex Brown or somebody. And it used to be Court Square restaurant after Shannaris had it. And that was, they had quite a few restaurants in there. Then Del Haven. Out there where Del Mall, right there is north of Bel Air, off Route 1, where they got Del Plaza. That used to be Del Haven, had a big swimming pool. And Mr. Irwin had that. He had a whole bunch of girls. I used to go with one of those girls, Felicia, nice girls. And they used to run a restaurant there. But we had quite accommodations in Bel Air.
Well, you you mentioned earlier the hotels that used to be in Bel Air.
The Kenmore Inn was a big hotel. And that's down there where Ponderosa, I think Ponderosa is now.
Right.
great big hotel, old Southern hotel, the big porch and all the big rocking chairs around it. And Mr. Hemingway, Hemingway was running. That's back in Prohibition days. I remember a little bit that Prohibition days.
Really?
And of course, there's a little bit of bootlegging going on and stuff. And used to have quite a bit of card games there, poker games there. It was quite a nice hotel. And when they finally sold it and all, I sold the bedroom suits, the desk they had in each room, and all the chairs. And oh man, that was some sale. And all the kitchen equipment, all the utilities, they had a big sale there. Then the other good one was where the state office building is on Bond Street, the big building, Mary Risto building they call it now, and then the parking lot. And that was the Country Club Inn. And that was run by Mr. Butterfield. And he was an English restaurateur. And he had a little, kind of a one-story with a bunch of nice little rooms and a beautiful garden out back and a nice kitchen. And I think it's on Saturday night, the black people had a band, and you talking about a band they would have. I remember a little boy listening to them. They're playing banjos and singing, and it was quite some place. And Mr. Butterfield was a little bit of a gambler. He liked to bet on the races. And right behind then, he owned all the way down to Hayes Street, where the Aegis, and across the road, my daddy owned that. But Mr. Butterfield owned that. It was 4 acres orchard. Kind of a halfway apple orchard in it. And I know we used to make cider. And he'd get, lose a little money, need a little money, so he would come and sell the property to Pop. So my daddy brought it first time $500, and he always said, Mr. Howard, I'm going to give you a profit to buy back. And he made buy back $750. The next time he got a problem, they sold to him for $1,000. And then went to a year or so, he bought back $1,500. And I think the third time he sold it to him, it was $2,500, and they never bought it back. My father bought that. Mm-hmm. And then it was the Yew Tree Inn, up where the insurance company. Another great big Southern colonial, just like the Kenmore Inn. And then across from that was a little place, called the Circle Inn. And it didn't have that many rooms, but a lot of time it was week, people run it by the week, you know, working around, and some of them run it a year long. And then where the Forest Hill Bank is on that Flatiron, we call it where Main Street and Bond Street come together, Mrs. Moore had three or four or five rooms. She rent rooms out, and she had the best meals there.
So she had a boarding house?
Oh my, yes. And she cooked a meal and knocked you out of that. But that's then Mr. Vaughn, he didn't have meals, but he had a hotel right where the Commercial Bank parking lot is. All right, but and Commercial Bank was part of that too. About Red Fox, right there.
Okay.
And that was Vaughn. He had about three or four story hotel there. And that's about if I can remember, the accommodations we had here in Bel Air. We had plenty.
Yeah.
But there were traveling salesmen and all, they'd stay overnight. Then when the racetrack was going, a lot of people come down and rent for the whole 10 days.
What happened to them all, the hotels?
They sold out to businesses. I mean, the Acme store bought they ended up building there where the Kenmore Inn is, which they went out. Bond's Hotel, of course, it was a bowling alley under there. Gene Graybeal, who was the past mayor of Bel Air, his daddy had it. And he run the bowling alley down there. It had a nice bowling alley, and they had a bar with a sandwich and a pool room. My God, that had a nice pool room there. And where the Kenmore Inn is, Herb Hanner bought that and built the Motor Sales Garage. And of course that was sold to the state, and Poland's built a big building there. Then when I was county commissioner, I bought that for the county. I bought a lot of property for the county. You know where the addition to the original courthouse, right between there used to be a street called Wall Street. And my daddy's office was One Wall Street. And he used to get correspondence from One Wall Street in New York City to One Wall Street in Bel Air. He had people up there that he had some business with. So that was a Masonic temple building. It was also on the south end of it was the Harford Bank. And when the Harford Bank went up and Prohibition was over, we had state store, county liquor stores. And that was the first county liquor store there. And then they moved over on, I guess you call it Port Deposit, down Port Deposit Avenue, over there by the Far Company, where they get the liquor store now, High Store. And Bobby Archer built that, and Bob Cahoe. And I bought, with the commissioners, we bought that from the Masonic Temple for the new addition to the courthouse. Then I bought the old Aegis. We bought the old Aegis office, which is right across there, because the first building up, well, the Historical Society's in now, that used to be the county agent building. And Mr. Thomas owned the next one, which is the office building, and the next one was the Aegis building. And we bought that when the Aegis bought the place off my daddy. And then we bought the Harford Insurance Building, which is just down, it's Office Street, it's just down from the First National Bank. Sold to the First National Bank and they increased their facility there. And Mr. Lawrence Harris went down on Bond Street and Thomas Street, and his son has run the insurance building that's there. And that was the Harford Mutual when they went and bought the Circle Inn. That's a Circle Inn. Wasn't a Circle Inn. One across from the Circle Inn. And then the fire company on Bond Street was down right opposite Ellis Ann Street, which is now an office building. And my daddy owned that one time. And he made a deal, I don't know whether they gave it to him and they had to the fire company, but that was going to be the headquarters of the Bel Air Overly Railway. It was going to be the station. And he bought up some right of way going all the way down Route 1. But then Ma and Pa come in, so Mr. Shriver, Alex Shriver, was a great fellow to start things. So he started Bel Air Electric Company, and my father was the treasurer of that, and they got that going. So what we did, the Department of Public Works is where the fire company is now in Bel Air. They want to expand. So we traded the Department of Public Works building for the old fire company building on Bond Street. And then we sold at a public auction. And then that's when the public works went to Hickory. And they built their big place up there. And then they wanted a nursing home. I tried to build a nursing home myself. Mr. Adol Pons, Tom Gentry, Dr. Faber, and myself, and John Archer, whose family owned 5 acres where the church is now in Shamrock. I think it's a Baptist church, 5 acres. And we were going to build a 100-and-some bed nursing home there back in the time of Kennedy. And he was quite a geriatric fellow. He wanted to take care of older people. FHA, Miss Helen Holt of FHA, said she'd give us 110% finance, and we did it. And make a quasi-public corporation. We didn't make anything out of it, just want to get built. Well, the Shamrock people contested the town of Bel Air, and they turned us down. 5 acres. The building might cover with some, about 1 acre or so. But we're going to have a tot lot, and, you know, so people could watch some activities.
Sure.
They could walk to the, you know, most of some of them are amatory. They could walk to the library. They could walk to the Argonne Theater, which is no longer there. Or they could walk to do a little shopping up down Main Street. So that fell through. We spent about, paid $35,000 for it, I think, and spent about $15,000 for engineering and all. And so we sold the church $50,000. But we're just going to turn it over to the quasi-public. Still wanted a nursing home. That's the one we built in Havergrace, Citizens Nursing Home. Made a deal with Havergrace and bought the land for a dollar. Of course, if it ever would be abandoned, the whole thing go back to Havergrace. My mother was the first patient there. She was had her leg operated on, and she was the first patient there. Then they wanted a detention center. They had a review and they were thinking about buying where the Tollgate Mall is, which is a Durham property, or maybe some off the Hoser property, which belonged to the McComas, Charles McComas. And I got looking around and I said, you know, we said, why don't we just buy the, make a deal with the town of Bel Air, and we took the dump over. That's north of Bel Air. Knowing Route 1's coming through. When cut that off. So we made a deal with the town. The town had to dump there, and the dump was filled up, and they went out on Red Pump Road and built, had another dump. We call them dump, not landfills, then, which was some ground that my dad and Mr. Blake owned. And my dad let Mr. Blake take it over. Mr. Blake sold the 16 acres to the town, and then and then that was sold to the Forest Hill Recreation. They have a tennis club and all back over there. Anyhow, this, I knew it was a dump and it would probably be a little costly to build something, but we only got it for a dollar. And we let the town use the Tollgate landfill and got it out of town. They used to smoke there. I mean, they burnt and the rats and the smoke, it was awful. And so we built it. Detention center there and got some extra ground which was cut off when the Route 1 bypass went through, and the state let us have it. It wasn't too much, but they let us have that, and we built that there. And I'm glad they did, because it's on a good pattern. You got the one pattern and 24 pattern comes all together up there, and it's not too far from the courthouse, and so we bought that. We bought Liriodendron. Mr. Fritz Kelly come there, and I remember when the commissioners there, they weren't too much interested. And I said, you know, $3,000 an acre in that big old house. I said, I think it's worth buying. I said, if you all don't buy it, I'll buy it, because right, I join it. And they bought that, and we fixed it up.
It's beautiful now.
Yeah. Cost a little money on the house, but we, Mr. Kelly can live there for his life, but he was 80-some years old, didn't last too long. And his wife, Peggy, she got a lot there and built the house, and she could stay there a year after he died until she built the house, but she didn't want to keep it up too much. But it makes it nice for all the affairs we have.
Yeah.
You know, have weddings there and everything there. And they got plenty of acres there, and they got ball fields there and all, and I thought it was a good buy, and it is a good buy.
Yeah.
But then we needed a, we didn't own any recreational ground on the water. So down up, not far screen, down there off Willoughby Beach Road, That big, what's the name of it again? We bought the whole land there right on the water. And I paid, $160,000 for it. Flying Point. Flying Point. Recreation place. State give us half. So now it costs us 80. The gas and electric come through there, gonna put a high wire, high tension line through it when they build up the Paramount Park. Mm-hmm. They give us 85,000. So now we've got 5,000 place free. So Mr. Flake Duncan, we bought his miniature train track, $5,000. He set it all up and run it down there.
Oh.
So it actually didn't cost that nothing.
Really, yeah.
We got, that's one of the biggest area water on the Bush River. Because APG owns almost of it. And all we got is that far. I have, my daddy has it, my brother and I have it, and a cousin. Across the way, we have 430 feet on the water. Down there where the Elks Club is, I don't know if you ever know, went down to Otter Point. And that was the old Bush River Boat Club my daddy started. And Mr. Shriver. And that was the most prettiest club you ever seen. Big wharf. Had a launch that would go to old Baltimore to swim. And the only other good swimming place was Flying Point. So he got polluted around there, then they cut it off. So my father thought he could pump the mud, and the mud was all on this north side where he had the shore. He put a big pump in there, and he pumped mud and pumped mud and pumped mud, and the only thing he did is made the sand here over Flying Point. It never could, not much sand there, mostly mud. Mm. So you every Sunday for a quarter, take about 40 or 50 on that launch and go over to old Baltimore through the bridge and right on the other side. Mm-hmm. Proving ground approved of it for us to do it, and they used to swim there for a couple of hours and come back. Mm-hmm. But that was a log, I mean a big log lodge, and had even had rooms up the top and had a ladies' place over there, and had a great big cathedral ceiling. Oh, they had dancers, they had everything there. And big moose head up there. And so then he helped them to set the new Bush River Boat Club over there on well, it's up the river a little bit. Mm-hmm. I forgot the name of the place. But that's where that is. They had tennis courts, they had everything down there at that place. That thing was something else. Used to go down on the horses and all, stay overnight, had rooms there. Mm-hmm. It was quite, and beautiful view. My God, you can see way up on top of the hill, you can see all the way over old Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Across the bridge, and a nice view. So we got the cabin alongside of it. I think they built that in 1910 or something. Men that had him, it was a stag. And then the ladies got, they all got married, and there's my father there, and they decided they ought to have a cabin, so they built a ladies' cabin. That thing has been burnt down, though. Some kids vandalized. They vandalized this place a lot. Mm-hmm. But it's a nice log cabin. Can't see the big one. But it's in the 1900s, early 1900s.
Well, you've seen Bel Air and Harford County change a great deal.
Well, I reckon. Changed tremendously.
I'm sure there's been a lot of good and there's been a lot of bad. What do you think of Harford County today?
Well, you know, you got to look at something. I've always said this before. I remember when I was the president of the council, and we had a big meeting down in Joppatown and Edgewood, where people were complaining about the growth. And we set a meeting. I was president, and so finally a little lady back there said, "Johnny, you haven't said much all night. What do you think?" Well, I said, if we did 10 years ago what you want to do tonight, you wouldn't be here tonight arguing about it. You just don't put a fence around this county. You have the right to develop your ground the highest and best use. I think we ought to have controlled development. We've got to look at the road system. We've got to look at the school system. And it has to be in an orderly fashion. Well, in L.A., ipshop way of development without any good planning is not the best. And I, of course, my idea was to get as much industry as we could. And we have been very fortunate to get the Clorox, merry-go-round, you know, the big businesses. With the Bader Shoe Company. And what we have up here in Forest Hill is not big industry, but you know, they have 20, 30, 40 people working, and you get 20 of them, you got something. It's great for the economy. The industry doesn't breed too much children on the ground being developed. They pay a lot of taxes, and they pay their share or more so if you want to look at it. I am a very rural person, and I'm not attuned to a lot of this development per se, but I can't criticize it, because I say people have the right to do it. My great-great-grandfather's place now, they're building homes up there, Mr. Edwards is. He's my hunting buddy, nice fella. I think he sold 180 acres off the 218 acres, and bring in a lot of money. Building homes, $250,000, $300,000, $400,000, and beautiful homes. But that's c'est la vie. That's life. That's the way it's going. But I like the country. I like the mountains. I don't like cars. And the cars come up and down here 50, 60 miles an hour. The little motorcycle boy come down so fast, and the deer jumped out in front of him, and a little button buck, and he hit it, put himself in the hospital. 30 mile an hour is the limit. And then 3 or 4 days before that, somebody killed a doe deer. We've had quite a few deer killed on here. Got a bunch of deer around here. But the reason why we got deer coming this way is because of development south.
Right.
They're coming up the Winter's Run, and then I have Long Branch that goes into the Winter's Run, the same way as I have Heavenly Waters Branch in the Bel Air Farm. That all goes into Winter's Run. And that's where my daddy at Lake Fanny, but dammed that up, Mr. Shriver, and they made the Bel Air Electric Company. Mm-hmm. But I've seen a lot of changes. What was I tell you? I've seen a tremendous amount. Television. Hydromatic drive, automatic drive, walk on the moon, people running around the earth. I've seen a lot. Computers, God, it's copiers. I mean, everything is just great. I mean, I think it's fine. Well, we got computers. Does all our income tax? We just put them. But I still use that old thing. In my head.
Well, actually, that's all I have today.
Good. That's enough. We said enough.
Okay, but I do want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Well, I was thinking about some time of trying to put some things down I think about, but it's just, I never got around to it. But I've seen a lot.
Well, I want to thank you once again on behalf
okay,
of
Garth.
Myself and the, and
hey,
the people.
Garth, is that Scotch?
It's Welsh. It's a Welsh name. It means
Welsh. That's it.
Means a garden.
Gardens. Yeah, garden.
Yep. And thank you again.
Right.